Man, we are back. Welcome back to another episode of the Depressed Cincinnati Sports Fan Podcast. I am your host, Jesse. On this podcast, we're going to talk about the Bengals' first round draft pick. Yes, the NFL draft began on Thursday night, and your Cincinnati Bengals, with the 18th pick, selected an offensive lineman. So I'll talk about that. Also, we'll have our Reds weekly update. It was a very good week for Cincinnati Reds baseball team, so I will talk about that later on the podcast. But first, let's talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, I put out my mock draft on Wednesday, and I had the Bengals selecting, with their 18th pick, a defensive lineman, I believe a defensive tackle out of Illinois, in Johnny Newton. Well, that didn't happen, and the Bengals went with the offensive line, selecting Amarius Mims, offensive tackle out of the University of Georgia, with their 18th overall pick in this year's draft on Thursday night. Now, Mims is the fourth in his position ranking when it comes to offensive tackle, 22nd overall prospect ranking, which is really good. And I had Newton with the Bengals going with the 18th pick in my mock draft, but I also had Mims as my third option in one of my other previous mock drafts. So when I saw that the Bengals were targeting Mims, I was okay with it. And I was like, you know what? This guy has really potential, and it's a position of need that the Bengals needed to have at their right tackle position. And with Mims, he can definitely be that long-term option. Now, the Bengals did sign Trent Brown in the offseason to a one-year deal. Mims can hold that spot at right tackle for years to come and might end the season at that spot. Maybe. We'll see. Now, the last player to hold that spot for the Bengals when it comes to right tackle position for more than two seasons was good old Bobby Hart from 2018 to 2020. And the reason why I laugh is because Bobby Hart, he was a head case, to say the least, in his time here as a Cincinnati Bengals. But I think Mims can be better. If Mims can gain experience and develop into a good trajectory, it will fill the need for the Bengals, like I said, in that right tackle spot. Now, could Mims play in 2024? Potentially. Don't rule that out of the question, because Trent Brown has battled injuries throughout his career, especially over the last few years. Last season as a Patriot, he started 8 of the 11 games that he appeared. So Trent Brown is injury prone, and I think the Bengals looked at Mims and say, okay, you can definitely be playing in games, because we don't know if Trent Brown injuries his potential. He's injury prone, so knock on wood, Trent Brown doesn't get hurt. We don't want that to happen, obviously. But he is injury prone, and you draft Mims for a reason. He could play some games if something happens to Brown. Obviously, we don't want that to happen. But there's a reason why the Bengals drafted Mims and Zach Taylor and Dan Pitcher. And I think the whole team were eyeing on Mims throughout the draft process. And I really thought they were going to go defensive line, but I did say in the offseason in one of the podcasts that the Bengals needed to fill in that right tackle position. So I really like this pick. So with Mims, he started just 8 games at right tackle in Georgia. And I did watch some of this tape after the Bengals drafted him on Thursday night. You do see some inconsistency from an elite tackle prospect, but he is very dominant at times, and he has the tools developed into an all-pro player. He has the frame, quickness, strength, and outstanding length to move defenders off the ball in the run game and shut down edge rushers. That's really big, especially when you're playing the AFC North with many, many good edge rushers, including the Browns edge rusher in Myles Garrett. So I can see why this Bengals made this pick with Mims, most definitely. So Mims, he tends to hit the target with his initial hand placement, shows the ability to rework his hands inside when he does miss, and rarely loses once he latches on, which is very important as a right tackle. He has the explosive punch to knock pass rushers and second-level defenders off the course. When I heard that from some of the experts talking about Mims, and then watching film on YouTube, I was like, he does have that. And that's very important because, like I said, you're playing in a physical AFC North division with great defenses, and you need to be really dominant in the trenches. And we need to protect Joe Burrow. Okay, I do not want Joe to get hurt again this season. Knock on wood, that doesn't happen, because the Bengals really need a strong offensive line. I'm not saying the Bengals' offensive line right now is weak. I think the offensive line's okay. It's not, obviously not the offensive line in year one when Joe was here, when Joe first started, but these injuries have to stop. And I think drafting Mims, I think the Bengals are making a point that, okay, we need to get more physical. We need to get more dominant up front. And that's what Mims does. This guy is 6'8", 340 pounds. Whew. The Bengals like drafting big boy offensive linemen. And, I mean, they like to sign them. I mean, Trent Brown's he's 6'7", 6'8", I believe. I don't know. Around that range. Orlando Brown is 6'6", 6'7". Big boys. And then you add this guy, Mims, who's 6'8". So if I have to give this draft grade, I will have to give it a B+, okay? And the reason why I give it a B+ is because Mims only started 8 games at right tackle in Georgia. So he needs more experience playing at that position. But the upside, I really, really like it, and I think it's a good draft pick by the Bengals. And some Bengals fans I've talked to over the last 12 hours, they actually like this pick, because I think our mindset as fans is that we need to protect Joe Burrow, okay? We need to protect our franchise quarterback, the best player on the team. And it takes having an offensive line that can do that, and have an offensive line that's going to say to the defensive line of the opposing team that you're not going to touch our quarterback. You're not going to touch our star player. And I think the Bengals organization is realizing that, okay, in Joe's, this will be year 4 for Joe? It feels like every season this man is dealing with an injury. Okay, you're playing NFL, okay? You're going to get hurt. But it feels with Joe Burrow, something always happening. It needs to stop. It needs to stop. So I really like this draft pick. I give it a B+. And I think throughout Friday and Saturday of the draft, I think the Bengals are probably going to draft one more offensive lineman. Maybe. But I really do like this pick. Solid B+. All right, so the NFL draft coverage continues on Friday with round 2 and round 3 action. So with the Bengals, they have the number 49 pick in round 2. And then in round 3, they got 2 picks, number 80 and number 97. And then Saturday, round 4 through round 7 coverage, the Bengals have the 115th pick, the 149th pick, the 194th pick, the 214th pick, and then the 224th pick, and then the 237th pick. So I will be watching the draft over the next couple of days. And I think on Friday, you're going to see the Bengals selecting most likely a wide receiver. I think they're going to go that route. Wide receiver, and then a pass rusher. They need to get an edge rusher for sure. And the reason why is that Trey Hendrickson, this came out of left field, on Wednesday requested a trade according to his agent, because Trey wanted a long-term deal and the Bengals were saying that we're not going to sign you to a long-term deal. I was very, very shocked by that, because I was like, wait, what's going on? Like, what's going on here? And Trey Hendrickson's agent, Harold Lewis, told ESPN that Hendrickson's request is about a long-term investment from the franchise after the two sides settled on a 1-year extension last year. And this was what Lewis said on the eve of the NFL draft. Our number one goal is to get a long-term commitment from them. If we can't, then we're asking for a trade. And hopefully, if he gets traded, that's what we do. Get a long-term commitment with somewhere else. So, last year, Trey received a one-year contract extension with the Bengals worth $21 million, which included an $8 million signing bonus, according to roster management system. After another season in which he was one of the league's best defensive ends, Hendrickson is looking to cash in again, which I get it. Lewis said he and Trey met with the Bengals in a two-hour meeting in March to discuss the possibility of a potential trade. Hendrickson's agent said that the team is willing to discuss a potential new deal next year with his current contract set to turn through 2025 season. In that meeting, the Bengals indicated that they had no interest in trading Trey. A source told ESPN Adam Schefter that Cincinnati is not interested in trading Trey Hendrickson. So in 2023, Hendrickson finished the season with 17.5 sacks, which was second in NFL behind the Pittsburgh Steelers. T.J. Watt is the highest total for the Bengals since sacks became an official stat in 1982. We know what Trey can do, guys. I love Trey. Before the season last year, me and Tommy did our predictions of what's going to happen in the NFL, and specifically with our Cincinnati Bengals. And I had a big goal saying that, or a big prediction that I said that Trey was going to lead the league in sacks. He was that close from doing that. And Trey is such an impact player on the Bengals defensive front. He's very good at getting to the quarterback. He's a game wrecker. And when Trey was first signed as a Bengal, he signed a four-year deal worth $60 million in 2021. He's a former third-round pick out of Florida Atlantic. He reached the Pro Bowl in each of his first three seasons with the Bengals, and he has registered 39.5 sacks total with the Bengals. And Lou Anarumo talked about Trey in the scouting combine in February, saying he has his own way about going about his business and his about being the best player and he can be and making sure we're the best team we can be. You know, with T. Higgins requesting a trade in the offseason, I don't know. For some reason, the Bengals, and when it comes to the players' agents, they don't really see eye to eye. And it's kind of frustrating to say the least. I wish that they can have a better relationship with the players' agents. And I understand with Ja'Marr Chase's long-term contract extension looming, I think the Bengals are telling Trey that we can't sign you for that long because we have to sign Ja'Marr Chase to a long-term deal, a big contract coming up. So it's very frustrating, and obviously with the whole T. Higgins stuff and him wanting to get traded because the Bengals couldn't come to terms with a long-term deal for him. I don't know. I think the Bengals need to work on the player agents relationships when it comes to that front. So I hope Trey will be a Bengal in 2024. We'll see what happens in the next 2 days of the NFL draft. Bengals made it really clear that they're not going to trade Trey. I don't see that happening, but you never know. You never know. And if somehow the Bengals do end up trading Trey Hendrickson, you will get an emergency podcast episode from me right away. But I think Trey will be a Bengal in 2024. That was very shocking to me when I heard that news, when I got a text message from two of my friends. Well, Tommy texted me, then I got three other messages, and I was just like, wait, what is going on? This is why I try to stay off social media. I was like, what? So let's hope Trey is a Bengal in 2024, which I believe he will. But I don't make that kind of decision. I am not what you call it, like a genie or like a psychic. Is that what they call it? All right. We'll get out of sorts here. All right, so that's the Bengals NFL draft segment. Let's talk about our Cincinnati Reds. It was a very, very, very good 7-game homestand for your Cincinnati Reds. It began last Friday night, beginning a 3-game series with the Los Angeles Angels and Mike Trout. Friday night, the Reds won 7-1. Nick Lodolo on the mound making his debut at home. Lodolo goes 6 1/3 innings, 7 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 6 strikeouts, no walks, threw 80 pitches. Ellie De La Cruz, 3-run home run, went 2-for-4 with 3 RBIs. And Tyler Stevenson, who's continuing to hit the baseball well over the last 2 weeks, hit a home run as well. Good Reds victory in the first game of the 3-game set against the Angels on Friday night. Saturday afternoon, Reds are winners 7-5. In the first inning, crazy stuff happened. The Angels put up 2 runs, and then in the bottom of the first, Stuart Fairchild, RBI double, and then Tyler Stevenson connected on a grand slam. His first of his career, 5-2 Reds in the first inning. That was very fun to watch. And then the fifth inning, Fairchild, RBI single. And then with the bases loaded, Ellie De La Cruz walked to bring in a run to make it 7-2. And then the Angels added 3 more runs in the sixth inning and seventh inning. And the Reds were able to hold on, winning the game 7-5. Graham Ashcraft, 5 innings pitched, 5 hits allowed, 5 earned runs, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. And then Nick Martinez came on. He had 3 innings pitched, 0 earned runs, 2 hits, 2 strikeouts. And then Alexis Diaz came on in the ninth inning to preserve the save. Reds are victories 7-5. Don't know why I paused right there, because I look at my notes, I look at my handwriting, and I'm like, Jay, what are we doing here? All right, series finale against the Los Angeles Angels on Sunday afternoon. Reds winners, shutout winners, 3-0. This game, the first 5 innings was pretty much boring. And then finally, the Reds were able to get some runs in the sixth inning. CES 2-run double to make it 2-0 Reds. And then Candelario, I finally got that name right. I've been butchering this guy's name for the longest time. And one of my followers was like, man, you're butchering Candelario's name. And I'm like, okay, I love you guys. I always say I love my followers. But this follower right here was being a little aggressive. And I was like, I'm not going to be mean. I'm going to correct myself. And I did. So Candelario, after CES hit a 2-run double to make it 2-0 Reds, connected with a triple to make it 3-0. In this game, Frankie Muniz started for the Reds, and he left the game in the first inning because he got hit on a comebacker and it bruised his forearm. Thankfully, x-rays came back negative. It's just a bruise. So the Reds are saying that he's going to miss probably 2 starts, but thankfully he's not going to be out for like a month. But the Reds bullpen dominated. Brent Suter came on, 3 1/3 innings pitch. Emilio Pagan, 2 innings pitch. Fernando Cruz, 1 inning pitch. Lucas Sims, 1 inning pitch. And then Alexis Diaz comes on for the save. Scoreless. The Reds bullpen dominated. So well done. Sweep of the Los Angeles Angels. That deserves a standing ovation. Well done. I believe that's the Reds' 8th straight victory over the Los Angeles Angels. Man, I feel bad for Mike Trout. This guy is going to be a Hall of Famer, but dude, I understand you want your money. You're already a freaking millionaire or whatever. Like, do you want to win a World Series? You should just leave. Just go. Go get a ring. You're already going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, the Angels are not helping you out. They're not. They gave you Ohtani and they messed that up. This just doesn't make sense at all. It really doesn't. All right. So, Angels out of town. In comes the Philadelphia Phillies for a big 4-game series. It did not start off well on Monday night with the Phillies. Phillies dominated the Reds, 7-0 shutout win. Reds offense only mustered 2 hits. Phillies starter, left-hander, who obviously when the Reds always face off against the opposing team's pitcher, and especially a lefty, you know that the Reds offense is probably going to have like 3 hits or less. In this game, Ranger Suarez came into the game with an 18 scoreless innings streak. Well, he extended to 25 in this game. The Reds offense only had 2 hits. Suarez, 7 innings pitch, 2 hits, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. He only threw 88 pitches in 7 innings. This game on Monday night went by quick. It started at 6:40. It ended at 8:45. 2-hour game. Hunter Green was on the mound for the Reds. Now, on this podcast, I have given Hunter Green some harsh criticism. But in this game, he didn't allow home runs. He allowed soft singles. But he was able to preserve the Reds' bullpen. Hunter went 7 innings, allowed 7 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, threw 99 pitches. That was very big because the day before, the Reds' bullpen was used a lot because of Frankie's injury. So it was very big of Hunter Green to go 7 innings in this game, even though the Reds were never in it. So that was big right there. So Phillies take game 1, and then game 2, the Reds reverse it, and they destroy the Phillies 8-1. First inning, Alec Boehm had an RBI double. And then the bottom inning, CES had an RBI double to tie the game at 1. And then the third inning, CES singles to left. Stevenson scored on an error. CES goes to third on another error. Golly, the Phillies had so many errors in the third inning, it felt like they had 10. And then CES and Ellie scored on another error. And then Espinal hit an RBI single to make it 5-1. Great 4-run inning by the Reds offense. And in the fifth inning, Ellie De La Cruz hits an opposite field 2-run home run to make it 7-1. And then Espinal hits a home run to left field in the eighth inning. 8-1 Reds. CES had 3 hits. Espinal had 3 hits. I guess I'll give him a standing ovation because I almost, if he didn't do well in this game or in this series in general, I was about to go in on him. And I kept telling myself, okay, he's not a star player. He's what the Reds need him to be. A player that will fill the hole in need of in the infield. But it was very good to see Espinal have this type of game, for sure. And he had a really good series against the Phillies. Really good. So the Reds even up the 4-game set with the Phillies. Game 3, Reds big winners, 7-4 on Wednesday night. Phillies scored in the first inning and the third inning. So it's 2-0 Phillies. Third inning, Will Benson hits a home run to center field to get the Reds scoring going. 2-1 Phillies. And then the sixth inning, the Phillies added a run. And then the bottom of the sixth inning, magic happens for the Reds offense. Espinal blooped a 2-run single to right that scores CES and Spencer Steele to tie the game at 3. Then Will Benson hits a single to center that scored Espinal. And then the reason why Espinal scored because the Phillies committed another error on the outfield. My goodness. 4-3 Reds. Then Ellie De La Cruz hits a ground rule double that scored Fairchild to make it 5-3. Then the Phillies scored in the 7th to make it 5-4. And in the 7th inning, Espinal hits a sacrifice fly that scored Bubba Thompson to make it 6-4 Reds. And then the 8th inning, the Reds need an assurance run. And who better to do it than Ellie De La Cruz, who's having one hell of a run lately. The Ellie factor, as I call it. So he walked and then stole 2nd and 3rd. And then Spencer Steer gets a sacrifice fly that gets him home to make it 7-4. And then Alexis Diaz comes on in the 9th inning for the save. A 5-pitch save. Reds 7, Phillies 4. What a win right there. What a win. At first it looked bleak, but the Reds were able to get it done. And then the series finale of the four-game set on Thursday afternoon. Pretty much like game one of the series. Phillies win shutout fashion 5-0. Bryce Harper comes back after his daughter was born. Congrats to him. He hits a home run, obviously. He has four home runs in the season series against the Reds. The Reds offense only mustered three hits against Zach Wheeler. Spencer Steer nearly missed a grand slam in the fourth inning. The best chance of the whole game, the Reds to score a run. Spencer Steer missed a grand slam. He hit the ball to deep center field. It looked good off the bat, but unfortunately, it did not get out of the ballpark. Nick Martinez, six innings pitched, 11 hits allowed, five earned runs. He threw 89 pitches, preserved the bullpen as well. Sam Moll, the left-hander, comes in. He throws one inning, allowed no runs, one walk, 21 pitches. And then Buck Farmer, two scoreless innings as well. So, 5-2 homestand. Overall record by the Reds right now, 14-11. I will take that. The Reds hit the road for three games against the defending world champions in the Texas Rangers. Friday night, 8:05. Saturday afternoon, 4:05. Sunday afternoon, 2:35. And then next week, the Reds will be in San Diego to take on the Padres. Late night starts. Yay. Monday night, 9:40. Tuesday night, 9:40. And then Wednesday, the first day of May at 4:10. And then next weekend, the Reds will be at home taking on the Baltimore Orioles for three games for that. And that is your Reds weekly update. And that's pretty much it for the podcast. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to say or add. No, that's pretty much it. You guys watch the NFL draft tonight, okay? You don't have to watch Saturday's coverage, but round two and three, that's where you're going to get the players that could potentially make an impact on the team right away or potentially could be starters. So round two and round three coverage begins, I believe, at 7 o'clock. And then if you're like a nerd who has no life, who has no friends, and then is going to watch the draft on Saturday, the round four through round seven coverage from 12 to 7, you can do that as well. I'm not saying that I have all those things, okay? I'm just joking. But the round four through round seven coverage in the NFL draft, those are the players where you can, what's the word I'm looking for? Players that might come out of nowhere and make a roster spot on the team and can make an immediate impact. Those are the coverage in the NFL draft. Those are the later rounds where you'll see those type of players that are going to be like, whoa, I didn't think that player was going to be good in the next like 3 to 4 years. That's what I like about the NFL draft. Like Tom Brady was picked like, was it 199? I'm not saying it's a Tom Brady. Okay, before I go, the NFL draft, if you watched it on Thursday night, there were six quarterbacks. That were taken in the first round. Okay? Honestly, if you look at it, probably five of those quarterbacks aren't going to really do a lot good in NFL. I'm not saying they're going to be bust, but they're going to be like, okay. The only player I think that is going to have a good and solid NFL career is Jaden Daniels, who the Washington Commanders picked with their second pick in the draft. LSU quarterback, won the Heisman Trophy this past season for the Tigers. That's the only player. Caleb Williams, I think he's a diva. I think he's full of himself. I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to be meh. But 16 fumbles is a concern right there for Caleb Williams. So I really don't know if he's going to be like a star player in the NFL draft. But I really like Jaden Daniels out of LSU. But the Commanders have to provide that quarterback with talent around him. They really do. Yeah, but six players? Six quarterbacks? Six? That's really unheard of. And then The shocker of the draft is the Atlanta Falcons taking a quarterback with their 9th pick in Michael Penix Jr. out of Washington. I like Penix Jr. He was a solid quarterback. I mean, he led Washington to the national title game. But you signed Kirk Cousins to a long-term extension deal. And then with your first pick of the draft, you drafted a quarterback? I don't know what the Falcons were doing there. I really don't. That made no sense at all. Yikes. Just yikes right there. All right, that's pretty much it for this podcast. Once again, love you guys as always. If you guys are listening to this podcast on Spotify, give it a 5-star review or leave any review. I would greatly appreciate it. The podcast, like I said on the podcast on Wednesday with the mock draft, this podcast is finally on Apple Podcasts and also iHeartRadio. Woo woo! We're only going up from here. Next up, I think we got to get it on Google Podcasts, I think, or Amazon Podcasts. I think that's the next. So we're trying to get this streaming on this podcast on all the platforms. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. All right, that's pretty much it. Love you guys. You guys have a great weekend. And then next week, I will be back to recap all of the Bengals draft picks, all the 9 draft picks. Also, we already did Mims, but we're going to do every single draft pick and get my take on it. And then overall grade for each pick and then overall grade for the whole draft for the Bengals. So be on the lookout for that podcast as well. And that's pretty much it on my end. Love you guys. Talk to you guys next week. Peace.